Persons listening to this show should experience varying degrees of euphoria and might radiate a warm glow of truth from their entire being. This phenomenon sometimes lasts hours after a typical brain massage. If you are listening with another Lights On listener and they begin to glow, don't be concerned. This is a phenomenon normally associated with Pastor Scheidbach's patented brain massage technique and merely means the truth has set them free. The devil beware. Pastor Scheidbach is on the air.
Hello, I'm Dr. Scheidbach, pastor of Lighthouse Baptist Church in Santa Maria, California, and your brain masseur. Get ready for your brain massage. My thoughts woke me at 3 a.m. I'll share some of those morning ruminations with you today. Another tweet storm and Barr's consternation. Did Barr release McCabe to get a dig at Trump? Not likely. Let's talk about what it takes to work for Trump. The reduced sentence for Stone, who never admitted to the charge that he lied to FBI, nor was it ever proved. Well, anyway, this whole thing's a joke. Some big major raid on his house with the officers pointing guns in the face of his wife. It's disgusting. He should be pardoned. McCabe admitted that he misled investigators, but walks it back saying he didn't mean to. So what's going on here? Yesterday, rumors were that Strzok and McCabe were about to be arrested. Today, McCabe is cut loose. I'll give you some insight on that. A professor in the United Kingdom dresses up like a witch and channels Satan. Yeah, she thinks that to save the planet, humankind should go extinct. These are the same people who flip out over the possible extinction of a species of frog. Talk about channeling Satan. The abortion fight continues to heat up. Now the debate is over whether we should allow a mother and a doctor to decide a baby's fate after the child has been delivered. And then I caught this on a Tatum rant. We've got a white guy and a white gal, who stoop now to kiss the boot of a black Hebrew Israelite racemonger. And they're very proud of themselves. And I appreciate Tatum's take on that. It's time, my friends, for your brain massage.
Truth served here, flavored with delectable wit, succulent sagacity, luscious logic, a gourmet meal for the mind.
You ever wake up to deep ruminations? My thoughts woke me. Yeah, I've been woked. You have heard of the divine right of kings doctrine. Well, for some reason, I woke up thinking about that this morning. Many believe it is a Christian doctrine, but truly it's a pagan notion recast in Christian language. It is constructed out of an array of isolated texts. We can't do a thorough study on this, but to give you an idea. Like the verse that says, quote, "The king's heart is in the hand of the Lord, as the rivers of water. He turneth it whithersoever he will." Proverbs 21:1. Another one is, quote, "A divine sentence is in the lips of the king. His mouth transgresseth not in judgment." Proverbs 16:10. And a favorite is Romans 13:1, where we're told, "Let every soul be subject unto the higher powers, for there is no power but of God. The powers that be are ordained of God," end quote. So I say the doctrine is pagan because belief that the king is God, or as it's recast in Christian parlance, that he stands in the place of God over the people, well, that's a pagan notion. It's the doctrine of Nimrod, really. It's, in every pagan religion that has taken hold of any nation throughout history, so-called Christian support for the doctrine depends on scriptures taken out of context. For example, scripture tells us King Rehoboam, son and successor to Solomon, quote, "did evil because he prepared not his heart to seek the Lord," end quote. That's 2 Chronicles 12:14. So you see, the truth that God sovereignly turns the hearts of kings does not mean everything in the heart of a king came from God, nor does it mean that the king is not responsible for preparing his heart to seek the Lord and is responsible for the consequences that follow. Some kings start off with a new heart given to them by God, only to pervert it and destroy it in the end. And I'm thinking of a king named Saul. Sometimes leaders cause the people to err. They are the cause. It says in Isaiah 3 verse 12, "As for my people, children are their oppressors and women rule over them." And it goes on to say, "O my people, they which lead thee cause thee to err and destroy the way of thy paths." Now look, God does not turn the heart of kings to cause his people to err. The fact that God does turn the hearts of kings does not mean everything they do is something God wanted them to do or directed them to do. And the divine sentence in the lips of the king only means God sovereignly works his judgments through leaders. It does not mean everything a leader says and does is divine. Yeah, for example, when Belshazzar blasphemed the God of Israel, well, this came from his own corrupt heart. However, the judgment that fell upon Babylon because of it certainly did come from God. And as for all power, exousia, authority or rule, being ordained by God, well, that manifestly does not mean every personality that holds the power is of God or ordained of God to have it. Hosea 8:4 tells us Israel, quote, set up kings, but not by me, saith the Lord. They have made princes, and I knew it not. Of their silver and their gold have they made them idols, that they may be cut off. That's in Hosea 8:4. Now, this is a verse Americans really need to hear and heed. We have been given the power to set up our rulers, and we had better take heed how we use that power. John Jay, founder and first Chief Justice of the United States, said, quote, Providence has given to our people the choice of their rulers, and it is the duty as well as the privilege and interest of a Christian nation to select and prefer Christians for their rulers, end quote. He also observed, quote, whether our religion permits Christians to vote for infidel rulers is a question which merits more consideration than it seems yet to have generally received, either from the clergy or the laity. It appears to me that what the prophet said to Jehoshaphat about his attachment to Ahab, which in 2 Chronicles 19:2 says, shouldest thou help the ungodly and love them that hate the Lord? John Jay said, this affords a salutary lesson, end quote. Now, Hosea also reveals the underlying sin that moves his people to prefer wicked rulers. When he rebuked us, saying, of their silver and their gold they have made them idols. And then he warned us, what will the result be of this error? Quote, that they may be cut off, end quote. The wicked doctrine called the divine right of kings was used to manipulate unlearned Christians into a superstitious fear of opposing their rulers when those rulers oppressed them. In the wake of the American revivals that washed over this land in the decades leading up to the revolution, you know, God's Spirit began leading his people to truth, as Jesus promised he would, and the doctrine of the divine rights of the people began to develop. The idea of divinely endowed rights of the individual, and that overturned the heresy of the divine right of kings. The divine right of kings put a man between the people and God and said essentially that this man was God's voice, and to break faith with that man was to break faith with God. But the doctrine of the divine rights of man said every man has divine rights, that is, rights endowed to them by their Creator. The divine rights of man meant that every individual was equal to the king in terms of divine rights. When it came to divine rights, neither the king nor any caste called nobles or priests or whatever, not even the Pope, enjoyed any kind of special favor before the law. None was above the law. All men were created equal. Well, I try to get the left to understand that today. So where does government fit in? Well, God defined the role of powers that he ordained. The governments and authorities, the Bible refers to as rulers. When he called these people ministers of God for good, they are commissioned by him to protect and reward the good and to execute wrath upon those that do evil. Romans 13, 1-6, an evildoer violates the divine rights of others and so must be punished. Justice occurs when the individual's divine rights are restored and the violator is punished appropriately. God's wrath is executed upon them, and then the victim is appropriately vindicated. Under the divine right of kings, the people looked to government for protection, provision, and punishment, and anybody in government got a total pass on doing anything wrong. They were the law. They weren't under law. They were the law. The government took the place of God, and the people became subjects. Under the divine right of the people, government became the servant of God to protect the rights of the people, and appointed by the people for that purpose. The people were free to pursue happiness as they pleased God, not the government. The Bible teaches that Jesus is the only king and that all mankind is under God. He declares liberty to all mankind. All mankind, by the way, lost and saved alike. He endows every man, whether Christian or not, with inalienable rights under God. And wherever his spirit prevails among men, liberty prevails. And this is in major part because his spirit, being the spirit of truth, well, the truth makes us free. So wherever his spirit is, there's liberty. And among the great liberty truths that the Bible advances is the doctrine of the divine rights of the people. The devil teaches that Jesus is not the king and that every man is his own God, and really convinces them that they are under the power of Satan. And Satan uses what influence he is given to reject the reign of Christ in the earth, and to, quote, take the kingdom by force, end quote. Now, this means to take control of the kingdom of man by using their governments and taking these governments by force and by violence. Satan deceives people into buying into the idea that government is supposed to take care of them and provide for them. He offers them the world if only they will bow down and worship him. But worshiping Satan always leads to tyranny and oppression and misery. His system always destroys liberty, justice, and perverts judgment. And that, my friend, is the choice Americans have before them today. Really, it's a choice between the devil or God. It really is. It has never been more clear than it is in this election right now. You will choose life and liberty, or you will choose death and tyranny. Hold on to the break. I'll be right back.
God's War: Why Christians Should Rule the World. A shocking statement to many, but our founders didn't think so. John Jay believed Christians should prefer believers to rule our nation because Jesus is the King and all mankind are subject to his crown. Our founding fathers understood this and acknowledged Christ as King. Satan once boasted all the kingdoms of the world were his, but no longer. Because when Jesus died on the cross, he broke the power of Satan over this world and cast the prince of this world out. When Jesus rose from the grave, he declared, "All power is given unto me in heaven and in earth." Jesus sent his spirit into the world, and where the spirit of the Lord is, there is liberty. But where the spirit of Antichrist is, there is tyranny. The spirit of Jesus Christ is greater than the spirit of Antichrist. Now, you can learn how to unleash the power of Christ into the world to defeat the spirit of Antichrist. Learn how you can defend liberty through the authority of Jesus Christ. Free the world from the spirit of tyranny. Get God's War: Why Christians Should Rule the World today. Go to www.books@dbp.com. The devil beware. Pastor Scheidbach is on the air.
Hello, welcome back. I'm Dr. Scheidbach, pastor of the Lighthouse, your brain masseur, and Paul Revere's Lantern Lighter, lighting the lamp in the church belfry arch, saying that the enemy is on the march, an enemy that would steal from us our liberties. Another Trump tweet storm is stirred up into those little mini twisters I used to run and chase at the Desert Dry Lake. And Barr's feeling the political heat. Brouhaha boils on both sides of the aisle. On the left, the boil is over the reduction in Stone's sentence, given 9 years for allegedly lying to Congress, something he denies, by the way. And on the right, the boil is over Barr dropping the investigation into McCabe, accused of leaking and then misleading investigators who were investigating the leak. And this goes back to the Horowitz referral that was given to the DOJ in 2018. And we're sure he picked stuff that he knew wouldn't go anywhere. By the way, it's important to understand that McCabe was fired from his job and apologized for misleading the investigators, but then denied he did it purposely. And, you know, it's hard for us to hear this because we are steaming mad at the Dems for what they have done to Stone and especially the evil way they hounded and persecuted Flynn. But the fact is, before all of this became so totally partisan, in any other America, McCabe, losing his job, his career ended in disgrace and so on, it would not have been piled upon with criminal charges coming after that. Justice would have been satisfied with what he suffered already. Now, I know some others don't like to hear that. It just happens to be the truth. Everybody wants to see heads on platters. I understand that. Another thing to keep in mind, however, is that the Durham investigation is ongoing, and McCabe is a subject of that investigation, and we don't think Horowitz really did his job here. We think he set this up so that it would be dismissed. So keep in mind, the Durham investigation is ongoing. McCabe is a subject of that investigation, and Mr. McCabe could very well face far more serious charges. So Trump tweeted about the reduction in Stone sentencing, and the left is salivating over the opportunity it gives them to charge ahead with another appearances case against Trump. Little advice there. The Bible says we're not supposed to judge according to appearances. Trump is abusing his power as president by strong-arming Barr to reduce the sentence for his friend. Wow. And Obama let... I don't even want to go into that right now. I will get into it in another show. But the left is all, we need to investigate whether Trump ordered Barr to reduce Stone's sentence. And so, you know what? Here we go again. These people either have never read the Constitution or they are intentionally doing the pouting Pelosi with it. Rip, rip, rip. Trump could order Barr to reduce Stone's sentence. In fact, Trump could simply pardon Stone. Second, Barr made the move to reduce Stone's sentence before Trump tweeted about it. And third, Barr has openly stated Trump has not instructed Barr regarding Stone. Actually, what he said was that Trump had not advised him with regard to any case before him. But Trump, being who he is happy about the decision, and he tweets about it. So I want to look at this for a few minutes. What it must be like to work for Trump. What does the brain masseur advise Mr. Barr? Legally, and Barr is supposed to be the guy that knows all about this, legally, the president has a right to call his attorney general and instruct him regarding cases. The attorney general serves at the pleasure of the president and is directly accountable to him. Now, this does give the president a great deal of power, to be sure. Thomas Jefferson used it to full measure to go after a political rival, Aaron Burr, who, it was alleged later, attempted to start a war with Spain or an act of treason. Now, Jefferson wanted him tried for treason. Now, the bar for treason is set very high, and it was not reached in the case against Burr. And that peeved Jefferson to no end. I mean, so much so he wanted an amendment to be made that would allow a president to remove a Supreme Court justice with congressional approval. Now, it is known that Jefferson and Burr were on very unfriendly terms and political rivals, and it was suspected that Burr committed treason. And it's sure that Jefferson believed that he had done so. So the question arises, should Jefferson have been more politically savvy and concerned with appearances and stayed completely out of the issue with Burr, or should he have pursued justice regardless? And so we know that Trump would be motivated to step in for Stone and for Flynn. But whether this by itself proves his intervention was improper, beyond expressing his concern, you know, whether he ordered Barr to extend clemency to his friend. You see, in other words, if you're controlled by political optics, and I think Trump does have some regard for this, after all, he has not pardoned Stone, or Flynn, for that matter, but he's letting the wheels of justice turn. And I would not fault him, by the way, if he did pardon those men. But if the president seeks justice, if he wants done what is right to be done, as he has consistently said he wants, and if he intervenes out of concern for justice, well, that's another matter, don't you think? And some would argue Jefferson stepped in out of concern for justice, others that he stepped in out of just a vendetta against Aaron Burr. My point is that Trump is one of the most non-political politicians in American history. And if you're working for Trump, you had best take that into account. And that he's got Twitter thumb twitches. And if you don't know that, you've been living in a cave somewhere. I mean, it's what he does, man. You got guys like O'Reilly who think it's because Trump craves negative attention. Yeah, I heard O'Reilly recently, who presents himself, by the way, as someone who knows the president, says that there are two things about Trump that define his character. He loves money and he loves controversy. Well, and if you push back against O'Reilly's characterization of Trump, you're going to get an O'Reilly blast. He might even yell at you. I'm referring to something I don't have time to develop. I should not have dropped that in here. Anyway, I don't have time to explain it. And I appreciate O'Reilly. I really do. I like to listen to his opinions. And I will concede that he is certainly in a better position than I am to opine on Trump's character. As for me, I can only speak to what I see. And look, my explanation for Trump tweets, well, like the tweet about Barr reducing Stone's sentence, to me, it's Trump says what he thinks. Like, it's like I've said before, this president talks like average Americans talk, like at a dinner table or at a barbecue or at the kitchen table, watching a football game with some guys, chatting over the fence with your neighbor, that kind of thing. He says the sorts of things Americans say to each other and are saying to each other all the time. He is plugged in to rural and suburban America, to blue-collar workers, entrepreneurs. He talks their language. And so he says, 9 years for what Stone supposedly did, and these rapists get off on probation. You've got to be kidding me, right? And they stormed the guy's house, sticking a gun in his wife's face. It was a staged thing that was intended to intimidate and send a message to anybody else they come talking to. And this is weaponizing the government. This is evil and it's wrong. And that's all. So you know what I mean? Trump just goes off. He says stuff like that. And if Barr gets his shorts in a knot over it, Who did he think he was going to work for? Trump did not pressure Barr to do it. He did not have a conversation with Barr about doing it. He did not send a memo instructing Barr to do it. Barr did it. And the president got word of it and said, good, that's what should be done. What's the big deal here? You see, here's my concern. Apparently, Barr gets embarrassed by what the media makes of things he does. Apparently, he's another one of these guys that, you know, by God, I won't be influenced by the president, right? But he gets all sweaty hands over media making something out of nothing. If you don't have the guts to stand up to these media hacks and call them out and simply tell them what for, you'd better resign, because I'm promising you, my friend, it's only going to get worse from here. Barr does not need to worry about what the media makes of what decisions he makes. They don't control the narrative anymore, buddy. Trump has come to town and made fools out of all of them. You know, Barr, listen, Barr, just school the hacks in the Constitution and then do your job, period. Well, Trump tweets this stuff, makes it impossible for me to do my job. How? How does his tweet get in the way of you doing your job? Just do your job. You know, tell him what the Constitution says. The president can pardon Stone if he wants to. Now, I have no power to stop that. Neither do you. The people can express their opinion at the voting booth. But if the president wanted a reduced sentence, all he had to do is pick up the phone and call me or send me a memo and tell me to do it. If I don't like it, I guess I could resign, but I'm telling you, that's the prerogative of the presidency. It's really that simple. However, the fact is, the president has not asked me to do that. The facts in this case compel me to do it because, in my opinion, after reviewing all the facts in the case, the sentence was politically motivated. Good night. The foreperson on that jury was an avowed Trump-hating activist. What kind of justice was that? And who let that guy on the jury? Anyway, I hope Barr understands who his boss is and what his job is. He isn't supposed to please the media. If he did not know about Trump's tweeting habit before he took the job, couldn't that? Was he living in a cave? But he needs to wake up to the reality that he works for a non-political politician. Trump does not lick his finger and stick it in the wind to test which direction it's blowing before he makes a decision. Or if he does, he has an amazing instinct, and for once, we've got a guy whose sail is filled with the wind of God, driving this once great nation under God back under God and great again. Anyway, I need to move toward a conclusion. A professor in the United Kingdom dresses up like a witch and channels Satan. She says she thinks to save the planet, humankind should go extinct. To do this, she offers, no one should have babies. Until finally the last human dies and the planet is rid of this odious infestation of humans. And of course, that's my take on what she's saying. But she did say nobody should have babies until humanity is extinct. Now, these are the same people who would flip out over the near extinction of a species of frog. But this is Satan's agenda. You know, when he finally does get his man in power, that guy is going to wipe out millions and millions of people. That's what the prophecies tell us about Antichrist. His agenda will be to kill 1/4 of the planet's population. Of course, she wants all of them, but anyway. And right now, that would be 7.7 billion as of April divided by 4. Okay? Close to 2 billion people. This guy will make Stalin and Pol Pot look like little leaguers. And talk about channeling Satan. The abortion battle continues. Now, the debate is over whether we should allow a mother and her doctor to decide a baby's fate after the child has been delivered. Right. Northam, you know, the anti-constitutional governor of Virginia, explained his state's controversial abortion law, which allowed babies to be murdered after they had been separated from the womb. He explains it in this way. The baby would be delivered and resuscitated if needed and if the parents desired it. Then the doctor and mother would have a conversation about whether or not to terminate the baby's life. And in that case, obviously, if the parents decide to kill the baby, for as far as Northam is concerned, that's their right. It would, in his opinion, be legal to do it. Now, happily, that law did not pass. But can you believe we're having a conversation in which there is a side that is advocating for babies to be killed after they've been birthed, after they've been born? Now, I appreciate Ted Cruz and his position on this issue. He asked a panel of doctors if any of them thought it would be okay for a baby to be killed after the baby was delivered. One of the doctors answered, and her answer literally sent cold chills up my spine. I mean, it reeked of evil. She spoke smooth as a butter judge. Another silk-tongued devil to watch out for. She spoke with compassion, sensitive to the terrible plight of such parents, and said things like, "I trust the mother and her doctor with that horrible decision." That's what Buttigieg constantly says. "I trust the mother with the decision." I wonder if this woman trusts parents with the decision about what school they should choose for the children. But anyway, she talked about empathy for the dilemma of those poor parents, how hard it would be for them to make such a decision, how she would be concerned about how they spent their last moments with their baby, how difficult a decision it would be. You know, a situation where there is simply no good choices, and on, with apparent deep sympathy for the parents in this dilemma, and not one thought for the helpless baby struggling for its life. And besides, you know what? We've heard all this before, Satan. We've heard you say all this about abortion before, how hard a choice it is for a mother, how tragic. There are no good choices in abortion, how our goal should be that abortion is safe and seldom and or rare, I think they said, and how brokenhearted the mother must be who's forced with such a decision. Oh, and the tears, the crocodile tears would flow. And we heard you spit out those filthy lies. You're sticking your forked tongue, slithering into the ears of simpletons whose sympathies you were able to stir and control. But now we see them in their T-shirts, boasting about their abortions, and we see them dancing among the crosses placed on a field to commemorate the murder of the babies by abortion, and we see them wearing their abortion as a badge of honor, and we hear them boasting about how many they've had, and laughing about it, and promoting it like it's an honor. It's amazing. I prayed so fervently that God would reveal the true face of abortion, expose its fiendish reveling in the shedding of innocent blood, and look what God has done. And pray America will not fall for this lie, because before too long, you watch, you'll be exposed to the spectacle of women bragging about killing their born babies. Stop abortion now. Okay. Looks like I've used up my time. I've lit the lamps in the church belfry arch. You let me know you see they're on. Call 1-805-314-2114 and leave me a message on our listener response hotline, or go to our website, brainmassage.net. That's brainmassage, all one word, lowercase, brainmassage.net. Find the contact button there. Send me an email. God bless you. God bless America. And I will see you in church.
God's War: Why Christians Should Rule the World. John Jay believed Christians should prefer believers to rule our nation, because Jesus is the King, and all mankind are subject to His crown. Our founding fathers understood this and acknowledged Christ as King. Satan once boasted all the kingdoms of the world were his, but no longer. Because when Jesus died on the cross, He broke the power of Satan over this world and cast the prince of this world out. When Jesus rose from the grave, He declared, "All power is given unto me in heaven and in earth." Jesus sent His Spirit into the world, and where the Spirit of the Lord is, there is liberty. But where the spirit of Antichrist is, there is tyranny. The Spirit of Jesus Christ is greater than the spirit of Antichrist. Now, you can learn how to unleash the power of Christ into the world to defeat the spirit of Antichrist. Learn how you can defend liberty through the authority of Jesus Christ. Free the world from the spirit of tyranny. Get God's War: Why Christians Should Rule the World today. Go to www.books@dbp.com.